Welcome to After Cana, a Ferris Love podcast dedicated to exploring the vocation of marriage. In each episode, we bring you stories, advice, and insights from experts and seasoned couples to help guide you in your journey, whether you're dating, engaged, or newly married. I'm your host, Gabby Quinlan, and today it's just little old me. I wanted to make a compilation episode because we've had some really awesome guests on this season. And they've given some killer advice on dating, marriage, engagement. But today I want to focus on dating in particular. I think in the Catholic world, it's a major pain point for a lot of young people that, you know, they struggle to find the right person. Dating apps, the entire dating scene is just really tricky to navigate. And so this episode is all about putting together a bunch of super solid tips from people who are truly experts in this topic to help you live your singleness well and to find holiness in that season as you look for your future spouse. And so to kick off the conversation, I wanted to read a little excerpt from an awesome book on love and relationships. It's called Men, Women, and the Mystery of Love. It's by Dr. Edward Serrie, who's amazing, as you all know. but this book has some serious gems for anyone who wants to explore this topic, or especially people who are, you know, in the seasons of dating and engagement, in my opinion. The excerpt that I'm going to read for you guys today is from chapter 13. The chapter title is Single, Training for Marriage Right Now. And here it goes. You want to use your single years as a time to practice, to fine-tune the many virtues you will need to live out a strong marriage someday, if in fact God leads you to that vocation. Here are a few things you can put into practice right now while single. These tips will not only help you get ready for marriage someday, they will also help you to make a choice to live a certain way now, so that you can make your life more of a gift to God and to others in whatever state of life you may find yourself. Become a man or woman for others. Marriage will push you beyond what you could ever imagine in terms of generosity, love, and sacrifice. Suddenly, you will find yourself with another person and all of his or her needs, desires, expectations, and preferences, not to mention weaknesses, fears, hurts, and faults. And then, if you are blessed with children, you'll have little people who constantly need your care and attention, and you'll find less and less time for yourself. For many, the transition from singlehood to marriage and family life can be completely overwhelming. Marriage certainly comes with many thrills and joys, but also many unexpected challenges, trials, and crosses. Why is marriage so demanding? I know a priest who, when preparing couples for marriage, says to them on the first day, "You might think you know what marriage is, but you don't. Here's the real definition of marriage. Marriage is never getting to do what you want." He says it with a smile, somewhat jokingly, but there is a truth here. We have seen how betrothed love entails a complete gift of oneself, and that requires a real dying to one's own interests, comforts, and preferences in order to serve one's beloved. Such sacrificial, self-giving love is hard for everyone, but it is especially challenging if during our singlehood, we get too used to doing what we want all the time. When we are single, dating, and engaged, we can, for the most part, live however we want. We can do what we want, spend our time how we want, spend our money how we want, hang out with our friends whenever we want. But in marriage, we are challenged to realize at a much deeper level how life is not all about me. We may know this as a single person, but we are confronted with this reality in a much more intense way when we enter marriage. If we have devoted much of our single years, however, to pursuing our own interests, entertaining ourselves, avoiding conflict, and doing what we want all the time, it will not be easy for us to make sacrifices, to seek out what is best for our spouse, to be patient with our beloved's shortcomings, or to wake up at 3 a.m. to take care of a crying baby. But right now, whether you are single, dating, or engaged, you have dozens of opportunities to sharpen your sword and practice service to others. Every day, God gives you many ways to get more outside of yourself and to serve other people's needs. Apart from God's grace, nothing will prepare you more for the realities of marriage. In an era that tends to view the young adult years as a time for self-discovery and having fun, single people should be even more intentional about being selfless, about living to serve other people's needs and not just their own. So the rest of the chapter is also incredible, and I highly recommend this book again. But I love that Dr. Sri shares with us how essential sacrificial love is in marriage and how easy it is to not know what that feels like or not know what that looks like as a single person. It's true that when you're single, you have a lot of freedom in terms of being able to do the things that you want to do when you want to do them. And that does change a lot when you get married. But I think it's really good to remember that you can really sanctify your singleness by denying yourself those little pleasures or all of those little conveniences that come very naturally in that state of life. Dr. Sri gives some tips on things you can do, practical things you can do to be selfless in your singleness. One of them is, for example, fulfilling your commitments. When you say you're going to do something, doing it, following through, being a person of integrity, a person that other people can trust. That is a skill that carries over into marriage. Absolutely. He also encourages people to seek opportunities to serve, right? So maybe you're at a social gathering and you see someone who is lonely in the corner, not talking to anyone, and you would rather just talk to the people you know, but instead you go out of your way to make that person feel welcomed. That's a really simple way that you can serve in singleness. Another really important thing he mentions is not running away from conflict, but rather addressing conflict in a really healthy way. So not being passive aggressive with roommates, coworkers, etc., but embracing the directness and kindness that comes with a healthy conflict and moving forward from whatever that conflict might be. So that's a really great skill you can learn too. So there are a ton of other great tips in this book. Really, this episode is for the single person who's either trying to navigate the dating world or the person who's just not getting any dates at all and is really frustrated with this period of time. What we really want to encourage you in is that you can start living your vocation now, right? So I love this phrase just for so many things, but you know, dress for the job you want. If you want to be a great spouse one day, become a virtuous man or woman now. If you want to be a prayerful leader of a family one day, practice the virtue of, you know, praying every day, praying for your future family every day. There are so many ways that we can shape and grow and mold ourselves into the person that God is calling us to be in our singleness, or in our marriage, in whatever stage you're in, you can be holy. Another resource that I want to share with you guys is our new Ferris Love podcast called Single Not Stalled. It's a great podcast about living sanctity and holiness in singlehood, whether that be consecrated singlehood, or just circumstantial singlehood. It's a great listen for anyone who's in that stage of life. So definitely give that a listen. So without further ado, I'd love to share these great tips on dating and living holiness in your singleness.
The best advice I ever got was to start praying for your future spouse. Mm-hmm. Somebody told me this while I was in the seminary, actually. And they said, you know, it's part of your discernment. You're praying, maybe your spouse will be the church, maybe your spouse will be someone else, but start praying for them now so that if you or when you meet them, you already have a spiritual relationship and you've already started the habit of desiring their good, their greatest good. You're praying for their healthiness, their holiness, that you want what's best for them already. So you're already starting the habit of being that good spouse that you're called to be.
Yeah, and I would think just keep trusting God.
Yeah.
And not afraid to step out of your comfort zone, and yep. not afraid to make mistakes, which also means you have to not get too physical, right? If you're dating or whatnot, right. Because the more physical you get, the harder it is to realize and to recognize this is not the best fit for me. Right. This is not leading me to be the best woman or man I'm called to be in God's eyes. Right. And it's harder to break off such a relationship if you're physically involved with that person. So to just, you know, to keep it and not like puritanical, right? But like just to keep boundaries so right. that you can remain objective while you're discerning if this is this the person that God has intended for me. And if so, like once you get to marriage too, you'll be so much better off by building that strong foundation of friendship and of just that personal dialogue and that personal connection, more so than just the physical too, because that'll come. I mean, we're human beings, and that's always there to be cultivated, you know. But being free to say nope, not the right one, and not have emotional strings attached. I remember my grandmother, who God rest her soul, she passed away a few years ago. But she grew up. Was she dating in the 40s or the 50s?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
In the 50s, and she used to brag that she used to date 5 guys at once, and not like on the same
different,
day.
Different time, right?
Every Saturday night, her date would come pick her up and take her out. You know, they'd go dancing, or they'd go bowling, or they'd go to, you know, wherever the next, whatever.
That,
I don't
that
know.
That fun thing, yeah.
Something where there was lots of people, right? Mm. It wasn't like a single, just you and the date. But then, so she always talked about this and how she was like belle of the ball kind of thing. Like she bragged about it. But then you come to find out she didn't have her first kiss until she was engaged.
Wow. And you wouldn't think that hearing that story.
Right. You wouldn't. Right. But that gave her the freedom to be like, no. And like she said this one, she remembers dating this one guy, but she said he was too vanilla. So he was too blah, right?
I love it.
She ended up, even as being an Irish an Irish Catholic, she ended up marrying this like darker German Lutheran.
Okay, yeah.
Kind of like such a scandal, but she's like, oh, everybody else is too vanilla pudding. That's what
I
she
need
was
a little like, oh. little flavor. That's exactly. So funny.
But like she had the freedom to do that because that other side of it was not as connected, right?
Sure.
Like. And so I think that's what I'm trying to get at, is if you're still in the dating phase, to keep, I mean, you can invest in people, but to just keep it objective until God makes this perfectly clear, right? And trust God. Like, there will, if this is not the right person, there will be somebody else. There will be.
Right. Dating with intention. What does that mean to you? Why is that so important to date with intentionality as Christians?
I think it's the number one thing, the most important thing. And I think I've witnessed the, you know, downsides of not being intentional in my own life and in the close lives of others that I'm close with. Because I know how bad it hurts when you sort of just get tangled with another man or with another woman, and then eventually in like 4 or 5 months in, you're like, wait a minute, they don't want what I want, or they're just not, like, how did I not see this earlier, that they're just not aligned with what I want. So those things really hurt. And for someone who is, you know, a highly sensitive person or an empath or, just, you know, having that godly sensitivity who's not really used to playing around that much when it comes to dating, mm-hmm. those things can really hurt. So when it comes to being intentional helps you follow the Lord instead of just your own heart's desires that you feel in the moment.
Right.
It's a lot about, you know, protecting yourself from, sometimes even from yourself. So if you are intentional about dating, about your vocation, you will have already prayed about, okay, am I ready to get married in this next season of my life? Mm-hmm. Or am I just on this dating app for fun? Because if that's the case, then there is going to be no fruit from what we are doing. Right. And I used to be that before. I was just on dating apps for fun. And when some good, really good man texted me, I was like, okay, but I'm not ready for marriage. I don't want to get married this early.
Yeah.
So I think intentionality builds up from the point where you decide that, okay, maybe right now is a good time that the Lord is calling me to take on responsibility of another human being that I am responsible for to take to heaven.
Right. Right.
And that is a beautiful perspective, because whoever you are dating as a Christian, them and you are both daughter and son of the Lord. And mm-hmm. so if someone is that precious, you wouldn't really want to meddle with, you know, with them if they are not really, if it's not really meant to be. So mm-hmm. being intentional really allowed me, when I started doing it, it allowed me to bring the Lord in. It allowed me to be very discerned, you know, to discern properly if mm-hmm. they are the one, if the Lord is calling me to go deeper in there or to back off. It really helped me to understand, you know, what are the good, what are the bads, am I okay with this person's flaws?
Right.
You get to know all those things when you intentionally approach the relationship, when you ask questions on purpose, when you initiate conversations on purpose to understand where you're heading. So all of these things help you to prepare for, you know, to love the person as they are, as opposed to just falling in love with the idea or just going in with your most dominant emotion at the time and then regretting it later. Because that's what we always see in movies and all of these new Netflix shows. Like, they just go wild. Like, they have one piece and then they go all in. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't really make any sense, because they wake up the next morning hungover and then there are all these problems. And it's sort of pictured in a way that you have to fight for love and you have to, it has to be this messy, complicated, dramatic thing. But no, not really. So I think that is what intentionality is all about. You protect yourself and you protect this other person. Whether or not you get married, you still have this respect for them. Mm-hmm. And then that sort of allows you to know them in a better way, which is good for in either way, whether you break away or you get married. It's a very beautiful process. That is, I think, the most important thing, that all of your dating challenges sort of vanish when you stop, you know, entertaining men or guys who don't match with what you want.
Right.
It's as simple as that. Get really clear on you know, on who you are and what you really want, what your values are, what your ethics are. If you go in with that mindset, thinking that there aren't good enough men and all of them are doomed, none of them are worth marrying, then it's going to be even more harder to find someone like that.
Right.
Because that's how our brains work, right? We have something known as RAS, which is reticular activating system. Mm-hmm. It's the kind of thing, the part of your brain which really attracts familiar thoughts even more. So if you had to buy a car, and you're researching cars online and looking up on about cars on Instagram, mm-hmm. the next time you go out on the road, your attention to cars on the street will be more piqued. You'll be more attentive to cars, mm-hmm. right? Does that mean that there were no cars on the road before? No, it just means that you're just suddenly more inclined to paying attention to it. So the same thing applies to our relationships. When you're always thinking about all the bad things, about all the negative things about men, and you're always labeling men like, okay, he's not good enough, he's not this, he's not that. Mm-hmm. Even if some good man is in your area, it's going to be hard to notice that. So having that vision in your mind is very, very important. I fully know that the dating scene is bad, but that's only because men who do not want to be in the relationship or are not working on themselves are also sort of, you know, floating in the pool, like I said. But right. But as a solution to that, the only solution is that women keep on to their standards. Because when you do that, the men who are good, who are serious, who are also looking for a godly woman, will eventually find you. It's just a matter of time.
What would you say are things that, you know, women who are dating, men who are dating, what should you look for in a person, in a potential future spouse that,
yeah,
you know, you want to bring into a marriage, but you haven't yet. So you have that flexibility, obviously.
Right. So I would first and foremost look for someone who shares my faith. I think that's critical. Yep. I think years ago, that was just a no-brainer, but we've gotten more progressive as a people and didn't think that it mattered. And here's the thing, your faith, you know, we can tell our friends that they don't have to have our faith, but they need to find someone who shares their faith because they're bringing children into this relationship. And we make decisions based off of our faith. We actually treat one another based off of our faith. We approach apologizing and forgiving based off of our faith. Some faiths don't value that. Well, I need to marry a man who knows how to apologize and how to forgive. I mean, that's important to me, very important to me. So I would say the humility, you know, along with the shared faith, does he have the humility to apologize and to forgive? Which I say that my husband would be sitting here smiling at me because I had more trouble apologizing when we got married than he did. He was ahead of me in this area. So I am so thankful for that. I had to learn to do better. I would look for someone who's happy because you're going to be living with this person. And it's not too much to ask that this is a happy person. It makes a difference if the person that you're marrying is discouraged all the time or depressed or downtrodden. So I would look for someone who can handle life. And that might just be maturity that comes later, but I would prioritize that. And then I would also look for someone who can do life on their own and isn't dependent upon you and who will give you the freedom to live your life. If you're dating someone who, in the name of love, but it's not love, it's control, if they need to know where you are all the time, if they need to be tracking you on their phone, if you need to answer to them for how you spent your time, or they don't want you to spend time with any of your friends because they're threatened by that, that's a big red flag, and don't do it. So those are my quick go-tos for sure.
Any inspiration or advice for someone out there listening who might be, you know, struggling in, you know, the dating scene, what would be a piece of advice or inspiration that you guys would give those people?
If you truly, really, like, if you really feel like you're struggling, and I keep trying, but I'm not getting it right, is to really pursue the sacraments, because our humanness is always going to fall short. And so the more that we invite God in, the more that we cooperate with his grace, the more things are going to be transformed, because it's not just us. So if you're not yet married, and even if you are, but like going to the sacrament of confession, frequent mass, go to daily mass if you can. Something I learned way too late in life is the offertory part of the mass is actually supposed to be us offering our whole lives and like just giving ourselves as we are. Uniting our offering, excuse me. Yes. Theology. But I didn't realize I had a part in it. Yeah, I guess is the point. Is I was like, okay, great. The bread is coming. Like, but in that moment, we are supposed to participate in where we're at. Like whether we are a turtle dove or a prized ram, like any, wherever we are. And I think to not bypass that part of like God wants us as we are, and that is a good sacrifice to like really authentically just to do that. And then another, like a human piece of advice would be to really to start to look into yourself. Our old pastor, who's now retired, this again was like, it's so silly and simple, but when he said it for the first time, I was like, oh my gosh, that's so right. But every time we point fingers, you point a finger at somebody else, remember how many fingers are pointing back at you. And so, you know, we feel like we're struggling with our fiance or our spouse or our boyfriend or girlfriend, and they surely probably have some part in this situation, but like, maybe I should look first at myself and how am I contributing to this? And where are things that I can work on? What area of communication is falling short on my end? And to work on that, and that often that humility inspires the other to also take a chill pill and work on themselves a little bit too. Often.
Yeah. Nice. Renzo, anything from you? Last piece of advice.
Truthfully, for me, it'd be, you just keep going, because I think there's so much there, especially I think in this time, like there's a lot of temptation to despair, regardless of what stage of life you're in. When things are hard, it's just the temptation to like, this is never going to work out, and just think all the negative things. Maybe that's my own melancholicness, but like there's just the desire to like just be like, this isn't what it's supposed to be. It must not be God's will. But continue to, like, if you're pursuing the Lord and you're pursuing him through the sacraments, just keep going and trust that like things will work out for your good, because the Lord said that. Like the Lord, we have to trust at some point and really give all of ourselves to him, and just like, whether it's putting our vocation or our marriage, you know, or our dating life, whatever, giving it up to him and just being willing to give it up and be like, that's not the most important thing. You are the most important thing, Lord. And whatever you will is what I will happily receive. Like, I think getting to that point, is important, and like, it's not easy. I struggle with that myself, but I do think that if you're tempted with despair and tempted like, this isn't going to work out, just keep going. The Lord is there, and he's going to take care of you.
If you enjoyed this episode of After Cana, share it with a friend, leave a review, or head to the Ferris Love website for more resources on building relationships and families of faith.